outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, we were supposed to be in Atlanta, Georgia today.
That's right.
And headed down this week to Jekyll Island.
Well, that's not going to be happening.
Yeah, we kind of got waylaid here. I know the blog said Pensacola, but that's it. We're just across the bay from Pensacola.
We spent quite a bit of time, though, in Florida, back and forth.
We were in Florida a lot, and we were in Alabama longer than we expected because our little dog got hurt.
Yes, that was very, very sad.
Actually, big dog got hurt. Zoe ended up tearing her ACL on a romp on the beach, and we had to have surgery for her. And so now we're in recovery in an RV with a dog blocked off into a little section because she's not allowed much movement. We're seeing how well she can get on from here.
Yes, but she's a very good patient.
She is.
Couldn't ask for a better patient than she is.
And Mandy's missing using her as a pillow.
Yes, that's a little bit of a challenge with her.
But she's getting along.
We're making it. It's a little bit of work.
So Kyle's still on hiatus, and Sarah and I had this thing that someone sent me in response to a recent podcast, and I thought, you know, this would be fun to talk about with Sarah, because this is about the 4 degrees of love. And I actually never heard of this before, even though the guy who came up with this, Bernard of Clairvaux, was like in 1099, if I remember right. I'm 1100 AD, or Common Era, as they say now. Anyway, I got this email from John. He said, I just listened to the Gethsemane prayer on the same day that I was reading a devotional from Bernard of Clairvaux, from his treatise on the love of God. He starts with love as a natural affection that comes from God and shares 4 degrees of love. And he includes his interpretation of those above. I actually looked it up. The guy's from 1099, some kind of thinker writer back in the day. And he came up with this idea of 4 kinds of love. And I don't like lists generally like this because it seems to tacking the butterfly to the styrofoam. And sometimes it loses its power. But I actually was kind of intrigued by what he was talking about here. And I thought it'd be fun to talk about it with you. Just pre-trauma, post-trauma.
Yes.
Or traumatic brain, understanding it. And also just in the course of our own relationship with God, how that sorts out. So here's the first degree. First degree of love is that we love ourselves.
Well, how many people really do?
Well, the idea is that we all pretty naturally do. We love ourselves and we feed ourselves, we take care of ourselves, we attend to our needs, we look to find happiness and amusement. So the bias is that most of us actually start loving ourselves early on. In fact, when I grew up, loving yourself was a problem. It wasn't a good thing. It was selfish. Jesus, others, yourself. So I grew up in that climate where thinking about loving yourself seemed
selfish, sinful,
selfish, indulgent. You grew up in that environment too?
Yes.
But I'd have to say I actually loved myself. And so, and just say, this Bernard of Clairvaux, he said, they just don't become too lavish and overflow natural boundaries through excessive love of pleasure. So he does recognize loving yourself can go to a degree that's harmful and dangerous, but it's also loving yourself is the first line of actually taking care of yourself in a healthy way. You look back on your life now, post dealing with the traumatic brain that you had, do you see yourself as one who loved herself? When she was a little girl?
No.
Not even as a little girl?
No.
Growing up?
No.
So, did you miss that or did it get stolen from you? Must have gotten stolen, yeah?
I would say stolen because I was not given an opportunity, I would say, to love myself or even to be taught because... Isn't that something that would need to be somewhat modeled or taught?
Not according to this. And I don't know if this is completely right, but I think the point is that God gives us all a love of ourselves. And for someone like you, it would have been stolen from you at a pretty young age. 4, 5, 6.
I lived my whole life in thinking if I did or wanted to ask for anything, wanted to... think about myself, even trying to do something fun for myself, it was all being selfish.
And was wrong.
Totally wrong.
And yet you spent your time making other people happy, taking care of them.
Yeah.
So it's okay for them to have someone love them, but not okay for you to love you.
So we're in the Bible somewhere, I don't know, where it says you lay down your life for others, right?
Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down their life for his friends, which is Jesus talking about.
So then if you think about yourself, then you are being selfish.
But it also says to love others as you love yourself.
Yeah, I didn't hear that much.
we heard it growing up, but I remember preachers really trying to talk their way around it because they really couldn't talk about love of self because we saw that as sinful. That's just the way it was reasoned out.
Self-love, you take off the love and it's just all selfish in my mind.
Which doesn't allow you to have what's really important, and that is self-compassion.
True.
Which maybe that's a word that's easier for people who grew up in my tradition to wrap your head around. The self-compassion, to have a compassion for the person God made you to be and the life you're living and finding a way to navigate it. So if you didn't have a healthy sense of self-love, what did love mean to you when we got married? And we're talking about loving each other. You would say, I love you to me. What did that mean then?
Well, that's a good question.
Thank you. I spent all week coming up with these things.
How do I describe that? I mean, gosh, I love you. I love you. I admired you. I liked being with you. I wanted to be with you. I wanted to please you. I wanted to build a life together.
Well, those are all good things. Now, looking back, does your idea of love change?
Yes. There's a commitment. I hate that word. That's not good. There is a wanting and willingness to walk with you through everything, no matter how deep or how high is the experience or is our life together. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's a deeper level of understanding of what is shared in loving you.
Do you feel like now you love yourself?
I'm trying to learn.
Self-compassion. Do you have more compassion for yourself?
Yes. But that still has to come with some me coaching myself about it and saying it's not always there.
Okay, so like when you hurt or when you're going over through stuff with Zoe this week.
Yes.
Were you compassionate toward the things that you were dealing with her? Your concerns, your worry, your fear? Or were you hard on yourself?
I was hard on myself until I think it lessened when we were with the vet. Because I'm thinking, I had her on the leash. Why did I take her off the leash? Shouldn't have taken her off. And feeling responsible. And when we were at the vet, it was on Sunday to Tuesday, and we were talking about it, and you were telling me, I'm not responsible, but that's where I go. And, how did the vet said? I mean, it's not anything that we came up. She just said, it's nothing that we did.
Well, she's saying that for dogs, like Zoe's dog, the size Zoe is, they tear an ACL not because of an athletic event like humans do. People play football, tennis, whatever, they tear an ACL. For dogs, it's the joint grows in a way that stretches the ACL, and then it rips. And she said it would have happened no matter what. It was going to happen for her. And now she's saying there's a 75% chance it'll happen on the other side within a year.
Yeah.
And boy, do we hope she's wrong. So it wasn't anything that we did. Though even if it was, we took her off a leash, we let her play on the, she was playing on the beach with Mandy. They were running in the water and on the beach and having a great time. And then she came up lame. She just hit the ground and whined. And there's that sinking feeling. Because it was this less than 6 months ago, this had the stomach roll on this thing, and she had a death-defying surgery back then. So.
I know.
So now we've got to traipse around on this little thing. So I think for me, when I married you, and I would say I loved you, I would be saying, probably in this first degree of love, I love what you do for me. You make me feel good. You make me feel happy. I love being in your presence. I love how you cared for me. You would make chocolate cakes and leave them at the bottom of the dorm for me, which is the way into my heart easily enough. But I look back now thinking, I think my love in those days was very selfish, which he describes as the second degree of love. The first degree is we love ourselves, but not excessively. In a way, it's harmful. The second degree is when our needs are not met or hardships come our way, we look to God. So we actually... The second phase of that is, and because he's talking about love of God. So first thing is when we're in trouble and we're hurting, we look to God for help. Basically, we're loving God for our own sake. Right?
Is that kind of like wanting God to be our fairy godmother?
Exactly like that. Yeah. Which is, if he's right, it's a very normal progression of love. I know. I looked at God that way for a long time. In marriage, I looked for you to meet my needs, and we grew up in a very different era where there were certain expectations on the wife,
yep,
and certain expectations on the husband, and we grew up pretty much in sync with those expectations. And so when your wife's not doing her job, quote unquote, then it can be frustrating.
Yeah.
So I think this, but to see this, I think what's helpful to see this as degrees of love is, until you get to one, you can't get to two. Until you get to two, you can't get to three. So it's a progression of love. So almost, I've joked about that. Getting married was very selfish. But that's maybe part of it. I loved you for what you did for me. And I don't mean just doing stuff. It just made my heart pitter-patter, you know? You made me feel good to be around you. And I loved our conversations, even in college. But the third degree is one where it really begins to shift. He says, every time God brings us through difficulties, we soften because of the grace of the rescuer. He rescues us. Thus, we begin to love God not for our own sakes, but for himself. Frequent experience of God's grace draws us to the pure love of God more than our needs compel us to love him. In this phase, we now love God not out of need, but for the experience of his sweetness and communion. We love because we are loved. Now we love God for God's sake. And that, I've seen that happen in our marriage.
Yeah.
Now, more for you in the last 2 years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you were always good. When I married you, you were good at number three.
Mm-hmm.
Because you weren't good at one or two.
No.
You didn't have a sense of self-love or self-compassion. And you're the world we grew up in. The wife is to...
Yeah.
Take care of the husband, you know, make him happy, fulfill his needs, all those kinds of things, right?
Yes.
And you fell into that?
Yes.
And how do you feel about that now looking back?
What, with what I did?
Yeah. That whole part of our life where, I mean, you didn't know at the time. There was no hint that you had trauma in the first 20 years of our marriage. There were secret things going on inside of you that would have said that, but there was nothing external.
No. Do you think I did it wrong? I mean, if I think I did it wrong, is that what you're thinking?
Did what wrong?
Love you wrong.
No, I'm just saying, how has that changed? What do you think of that now? Because you started at three. You loved me for my sake.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a healthy loving me for my sake because there was no self-compassion for you in that.
Yeah.
So it was all the scripture user denying myself to take care of my husband.
It's basically, it was always because with the trauma that I had, my whole life was about laying down my life and doing for others. That was what I thought that I had to do.
Well, you didn't have anything else you wanted to do.
True.
Because even we were dating early on, I was like, what movie do you want to see? Where do I go to dinner? Like, I don't care. To express a want would be selfish in your mind. And we didn't know that's why you wouldn't. You just said you didn't care. It didn't matter.
And I didn't not just care. I didn't know how to. I didn't learn. And it's when you don't have the opportunities to explore what you might like or want to do, there's a recognition that you're missing. Because now, when I first, after the trauma exposed, when my counselor back then, when she was trying, and we would talk, I couldn't identify my feelings, what I was feeling. It took me a long time. A lot of times I'll say, I don't know. And then I try to, that circle of things that you have.
Of emotion.
It's very helpful because at least it gives me words there to try and figure out, is that what it is? And so.
And part of it was too, I think you had things that you knew you liked, but they weren't like, when I'd be asking you what movie or restaurant you want to, food's not that important to you.
No.
And movies, you enjoy a movie, but which one you see other than, you don't want to see anything. Horror movies are terrifying.
But I like going to movies. So
you do. But you really liked flowers and you really liked birds and you really liked dogs. So there were things that you knew that you liked.
Yes.
But when it didn't usually come up in conversations because we weren't getting a dog every week. But you did have some sense of what made Sarah feel good.
Yes.
And you probably didn't do that as much younger when money was really tight as you did when we got older in terms of birds and gardens and flowers and just what we had the freedom to do that we didn't when we were more youngly married.
Yeah.
Yeah, and aching it along. So that's what I thought would be interesting to talk about this because you seem to start in our relationship, you started in the third degree. You loved me for my sake. But because it wasn't healthy, it caught up to you eventually.
Yes.
So there is something to this progression of first degree, second degree, third degree of love. The loving yourself, then beginning to love God or love another person because they're meaningful to you. They provide something. It's the conversation you love or being in their presence you love. Not just romantic love, just generally kind of how friendships happen. There's a lot of people we're with at times and some become friends and some don't. And there's really no other reason than you either hit it off or there's something. And I think in terms of friendship, there's something you both get out of it or you wouldn't keep getting together. You wouldn't keep paying the price to find ways to be together. And then this other degree of now I'm beginning to love God because of what he provides. And it's not just the fairy godmother gives me everything I want, but it's also wisdom he has to negotiate things that are painful. It's also ways he gives direction to get through life and jobs and go through difficult circumstances. So then there's just a loving God for what he does. And what I like about this again is that's a step to something. And then the last one, the fourth and final degree, which he goes back to Gethsemane prayer. If you didn't hear the Gethsemane prayer, it's a while back. It was praying for Sarah, that point of coming to say, even if her wholeness in God didn't include me, I wanted you to know the freedom that God had for you. If I had to give you up for you to have that, I would. If I was the barrier, if I was in the way somewhere. And I love that prayer because I think when we're praying, not my will, but your will be done, that's not really prayed kind of at the end of a prayer as a way to convince God we should get it even because we're being so generous. It really is in the full face of knowing what it means, what Jesus was facing on the cross, and the full weight of knowing this is what it means for me, I'll accept your will. I will go your way. And I think, so he says the last one is that we love ourselves for God's sake. And this, I just cannot wrap my head around.
For God's sake.
In which we first of all, love ourselves. Then we love God for ourselves. And then we love God for his own sake. And now we love ourselves for God's sake. And that really confused me. So I'm hoping somebody who understands it better than I do would let me know.
Say that last one again.
We love ourselves for God's sake. And this my problem may be here is that whole love of self still sounds like something we're supposed to get free of. And I know intellectually that's not true, but he says, Bernard says that such experiences are rare, come only for a moment, We lose ourselves as though we do not exist, utterly unconscious of ourselves and emptied of ourselves. Thy will be done becomes our prayer and delight, not our resignation, not, oh, I have to do this, but the delight of it. This perfect love of God with our heart, soul, and strength will not happen until we are no longer compelled to think about ourselves and attend to the body's immediate needs. Only then can the soul attend to God completely. Now, I get all that. That makes sense to me. But calling that loving ourselves for God's sake just seems to, just the tagline doesn't seem to be what that's about.
So what do you think is a better way to say?
What I think of in my own relationship with God, because I, in the same way I see these things in our relationship over time, I see this in my relationship with God too. I see loving myself and then, yeah, I've got to love God. I'm supposed to do that. So as he meets my needs, I you know, we begin to love God because of what he does for me. And then to just love God for who he is. And like David talked about, being a weaned child on its mother's breast, which isn't a child who needs to be there to feed. The child that enjoys the presence. And I've discovered that for a long time. I enjoy God's presence. I enjoy his involvement in my life. I do want to follow him.
So what does that look like?
The fourth one?
The very last one.
Yeah, the fourth one. I would express it this way. It's mutual love of each other that's self-giving and self-actualizing at the same time. In other words, loving God makes me a better person.
I get that.
Loving him for his own sake. Me loving him volitionally, and I see this best in our relationship. When we are both loving each other wholeheartedly, it's the best relationship gets.
Yeah.
It's no one loving the other at their expense. Because I don't consider anything now in my relationship with God, anything he wants of me, asks of me, anything following him costs me, to me, is worth it. He and what he does is way above what my plans and my desires and my stuff is. I'm really on what God's about is the best stuff in the universe. So to me, I think the fourth degree would be a mutuality of love. And maybe that's what he's trying to say. But he talks about loving ourselves for God's sakes. And he talks about it no longer compared to attend to ourselves or look for ourselves. So it sounds to me like we've divested ourselves of self, which I don't think that's what God wants. That's kind of back to a misinterpretation of the first one, which is you deny yourself, which is one scripture. And it's a scripture that we, and I'd say, well, it's only one scripture. It still counts. Yeah, but it misses all the other scriptures that talk about my joy might be in you and that your joy might be full. There's things that God wants to stir in us that sets us free in his life. And to look at it just as, no, I'm supposed to love God, deny myself. But mutual love, what you and I have right now, which there are times when each of us gives up for the other.
Yeah.
But there's nobody feeling like they're taking advantage, being taken advantage of, or no one exploiting. There's honesty, there's mutuality. I feel your love as deeply as I share that love with you.
Yes.
And I didn't used to feel that. You would always joke about you're the romantic one. And I was. I had much more romance. And I would feel like, gosh, I'm not even sure Sarah loves me sometimes. Because I had no idea you had no capacity to love because you didn't love you.
Because in some of our conversations or things, my thing showing you that I took care of you. I, cooked or we washed or did all those things. That to me was the love because that's all I.
Yeah, that's all you had to understand it by.
Yeah.
But there were times when one of the conversations we had was, I'm just not sure you love me the same degree I love you. And what it meant was, and I think it was selfish. I think there's an element of selfishness underneath that. I want a certain way of loving. That at the time, you didn't have to give.
No.
And we didn't know it. I mean, you would talk about, yeah, I'm going to learn this, whatever. But even then, learning it sounds kind of weird. It's either there or it's not there. And I think what's really been helpful to me is, number one, to see how much you loved me through that trauma, not just the last 2 years. You've loved me through it, even to the fawning thing, which was not helpful, healthy for me or for you, admittedly. But you loved me well through the pain of the trauma that you didn't even understand. And now, as you're processing your journey, love means something differently to you than it used to.
Yes. How to describe that? There's only a feeling. I mean, especially the love of father is, because in one of the, shared it in the podcast when we were telling the story of this one event where it's in the bathroom and there was some big violent thing happening and there was a light shining through the window, like a kind of like a ray of sun that was coming through clouds. And at that point in time, I knew that Jesus was there. And then through different, over months, I don't know. Anyhow, I saw Jesus in and with me in certain, in some of the memories. And
a particularly ugly memory.
Yes.
And this is what I think is part of these degrees of love. I think for most people, how could God love me and let me go through that? Two, I'm in the middle of that and I know I'm loved.
Yes.
Which is the essence of the gospel, really, to know that we're loved even when all the evidence argues to the contrary.
Because I knew that he was with me and I was not alone. I'm sure, I don't remember if I, you know, where were you, why were you, I don't know. But that really, by those things, where it talked about the song, Amazing Grace, when it was, where the chain talks about the chains are broken. There was one thing about grace that I asked you. What is the?
It's actually the song where they've added that refrain to it our chains are gone, I've been set free. But the thing from the actual hymn was, 'twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved.
Yeah, I asked you about that. How does grace teach us to fear? Because I still doesn't, I mean, and you were explaining that. And it was that song that helped me to understand how I see Father's love differently. Because before then, what I was feeling, thought was just that's how, and that's what love is. Everybody feels this way. That's what love is, loving God. I knew nothing.
Which was more intellectual? You just conclude that he does because scripture says so. And
I felt like was this horrible person, but he said he loves me, so he loves me. But I wasn't necessarily feeling the depth of love that he has for me.
And I think it's important, I really do, to experience the depth of love. You have to feel you're worthy of love.
Yes.
And a lot of people have been hurt and traumatized or disappointed in God or grew up in a performance treadmill. Worthy of God means I'm getting everything right. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be. Now I'm worthy of love. And being worthy of love in God's sense is he made us, and his affection makes us worthy. It's the affection makes worthy, not us being worthy makes for the affection.
Because in that one memory when I saw that ray of light, there was a transference, I guess that's the only way to say, of the horribleness that I felt about myself, unworthiness, and that transference was transferred over to my grandpa, and that he did a horrible thing to me. And so I would guess you would say that there was shame that was taken away.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so it totally doesn't, you know, my eyes weren't skewed with that whole discolored glass anymore.
And now you feel, at least in a place where you can receive love or experience love as not, okay, I have to conclude that it's true because people tell me it is, to, as an individual, even at one of the worst moments of your entire life, felt the presence of Jesus that cared about what Sarah was going through. Didn't stop it that we know of in a way that we would all love him to by striking some folks dead. Those Old Testament stories, there are times when you let God strike a few people dead, but he was your rescuer. And since then, I mean, part of the ill-fated Israel trip we were hoping to do was to see how God's love would affect you differently, being in the Holy Land and visiting some of those sites that weren't as impactful to you, maybe simply because you weren't in a place to feel worthy of God's love. Is that putting words in your mouth? Or?
No, I think it was I would be able to appreciate, understand, and envision in walking in the places in Israel with him and how and what he did was going to be seen at a deeper level of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where I thought it would be different.
Right. And we didn't get to do it there.
No.
But in your life now, how are you seeing that work out?
Jesus' love.
Yeah, both for you and both in how you love others. Is that shifting as the traumatic brain is being rewired, reordered?
Yeah, I mean, I'm having to learn a lot more. I mean, I'm understanding in certain things lately where I'm understanding at a deeper level, which helps when I understand myself at a deeper level, then I can be able to see, kind of step back and have more a conscious visual understanding of what's happening to be able to help me have more grace and compassion for myself, or to be able to say, like with this last week, you know, with Zoe, I was like, you know, it's a daily thing that we were having to walk through, and I was waking up nervous and you know, how can I trust? How do I trust? How do I trust that Father's going to be with this through this? And so learning how to do that, and then learning, and then recognizing by learning to walk forward through life, to trust is basically where I am looking backwards at what he's done. Because Sunday, she got hurt. Then I was on the phone, and then trying to go to a vet emergency and found that they couldn't get her in. I was on the phone trying to find another one, and right when I was on the phone, they said we have a cancellation, and then 15 minutes, and I was 6 minutes away, and then had that, and then by Monday, then the vet's finding somebody else who'd be able to recommend and refer, and then we're with them, and then it's just, you know, in each of those steps the way. And then Tuesday, the vet was saying that, which would have happened. It wasn't because we did something wrong. And I mean, I vocalized to that, to you, but I didn't vocalize it to the vet. And so it's just different things along the way. I mean, I've talked to you about it, and we've talked about it, where I felt that Father helped me in some of the preparation and what I was doing when I left you. That's very conflicting to think that he was there helping me. And so walking backwards, I say, okay, he was there, he helped me here, he did this. And
it's not walking backwards, it's walking forward, turned backwards.
Yeah, turned backwards.
Which is a Hebrew view of faith, is you go into the unknown future looking back at the certainty of the way God has cared for you in the past. So it's like, okay, I was in that situation, way over my head. God found a way through it. So now as I'm going to this next situation by looking behind, and which is why there's so many in the Psalms about talk about God's faithfulness. Tell your stories to the next generation. Help people understand how faithful and kind this God is. So when you're in the next situation that you can't see any answers for, and worry, anxiety, whatever is rising in your heart, you look back and go, and yet my God has been faithful.
But yet, you know, in that, he doesn't deliver us. Well, he may, it's some people at certain times. It's not like he delivers us or makes our life without pain or without problems or emergencies. It's the how he has, it's remembering how he helped and us through these things. And that's what is, okay, he was with me here, so I don't know what he's going to do here, but there's going to be something that's going to be there. And it's building a trust, because I don't know how to do that.
That's part of that fairy godmother stuff, though, right? God's supposed to fix everything so I never hurt. And if that's the bias you live with, it's all downhill, because we live in a broken world. Stuff happens. God doesn't protect Zoe from ripping her Achilles heel, it's the ACL, because we're out meeting with people and helping on their journeys in Jesus. So we should have a pain-free existence. I remember getting a prayer request from somebody that was going to Israel to pray for salvation of Israel or something, and here's our prayer list. One, they needed money. And the other thing was, pray that we won't have any jet lag and we'll get there and everything will be great. And I just rolled my eyes going, wow, how banal have we made this God who just is supposed to, even when we're doing something to in line of it would be costly, somehow God's supposed to keep it from being costly. And I grew up with some of that, so I get it. And to be able to find God, which to me is this fourth degree, this mutuality of I love him, he loves me, we'll get through this together. I'm listening to him, he's listening to me. And there's this cohesion of two lives intersecting on the planet, God's and mine. And I think for you and me, that's really become true. I'd say in the second year of this two-year process of healing, in the first year, it was a lot of care for you. It was, my gosh, there's so much going on for you, and how do I love you, keep providing a safe place, whatever. About a year ago, it became much more mutual. You've always been good at loving me. Fawning me is one of those ways you did it, but you've always been good at loving me, but now there's much more of a mutuality in being able to talk about stuff.
Yeah.
And neither one of us fighting for our way, but neither one of us being dishonest about what we would enjoy.
I mean, it's still, at times I struggle with expressing my thoughts or opinions or wants or needs. I'm trying to come up, you know.
Desires, preferences.
To be even honest with how I'm feeling. Sometimes it takes me a few days, or not so much weeks, but days or hours.
But for one who never did it?
Yeah.
To one that is, even if it takes 2-3 days to look at me and say, I'm really nervous today. Okay, thank you for letting me know. I'm much more aware of it now. I will walk through this with you and encourage you and just be with you.
Because like with the vets, I mean, we've had over this last year and a half, we've had three different things with vets and while traveling. And for each...
Major things with vets,
yes.
Not even minor things.
And with each one with Abby and the one last, I mean, it was, well, not perfect. It was a very special, knowledgeable vets that we had for each of those times. And in now looking back, you know, like this time, so it's just, it kind of helps to be able to have a breath of fresh air or be able to take a deep breath and thinking, okay, I've had it, you know, three times now on the road. And there again this Tuesday, this vet, her demeanor, her knowledge, her just coming in, her compassion and how she processed it all through, because it was a very complicated situation.
Yeah, there's a mitigating factor which we need to discuss here because it's a little too complex to get into.
But I mean, it was just, she was just the right person.
She was the right vet. And the way she handled you, the way she talked about what was going on, and even she didn't know what the best way forward was when she came in the room. She said, I hope you don't mind me just talking out loud, because we've got to figure out and there's no easy, clear, this is the best answer.
Yeah.
So we've got options, and we need to figure out, and they're all going to be painful for poor Zoe. But it's lovely that the three vets we found had the personalities that you connect well with. That's a big, it wasn't just their expertise as vets, that was big. It was also their personality type that really was a gift to you.
Yeah. And then even with the trauma and the, how the memories came and how the process of going through them, and early on, some of the places that we were in physically, location with a memory was happening. I mean, it just, with that, I go away with knowing that he's there, but it's not like he takes the pain away, but he's there and walking with you through it. Like, yep. You and having you with how our love, I feel, is at a deeper level than it's ever been. It's a different relationship.
Well, it doesn't seem fair. We met a new couple in Pensacola, and because we ended up staying around longer, we got to spend more time with them. And it just enjoyable to experience them, a fairly new marriage in terms of ours. And yet I feel like we have, and I told them, I feel like we have a brand new marriage. I feel like I see a lot of people, you know, we're approaching 49 years of marriage, and a lot of couples there, they're used to living together, and they kind of have their own things and do their own stuff, and they're nice to each other and whatever. But I feel like I got married all over again. And I have a woman now in my life that is familiar because she's been here for 49 years, but also new. The things we get to talk about and explore, how you're thinking versus how I'm thinking, is all new and so wonderful and so fresh and so alive. And it seems like we're stealing something at 49 years together, being able to have just, like you said, I make all things new. Everything seems so completely new because of what God has changed in my heart through what we went through and through what God's changing in yours over the trauma. So there's four things here. That we love ourselves, not all bad if you don't do it to the extreme. When our loving God for our own sake, so we love him because he does stuff for us, to loving God for his own sake, to wanting to be part of his life, part of his needs. And I think this mutuality, this last one, which the Gethsemane prayer or holding agony with God, holding some of those things, I do think there's a way down the journey where you can share a mutuality inside God without the fear of selfishness, without the thoughts of, but really trusting that what his way is going to be the best way, and just how do you make it known to me? And I love that with us, and I love it with him both. It's just, it's the greatest joy in my life right now. Both of those, experiencing life with you and this whole thing that God's asked me to walk with him in, to watch and pray and to speak to his bride. It's crazy stuff. I love it.
Good.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.